flavour.
This is Cambridge Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pies.
My wife's cakes are selling at Hotcakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like? Condicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with our fortnightly look at food and drink in and around Cambridge. I am Matt Bentman and I am here live in the Guider Street studio with Alan Alder. So, have you had a good week, Alan?
Well, yes, I have. I've had a very good week. I've been enjoying some of our local cafes and I've also been talking about them for Flavour with Magna and Jonas, the founders of the Darwin Coffee Society. And I've also been to Hot Numbers in Shepreth and chatted to the head baker, Reese, about their new monthly breads and the other new baked goods they've got. And it was great to talk to someone who really has a genuine passion for what he does.
Lovely. I've been down to Empty Common Community Garden for a catch-up on their situation because they're on the search for volunteers.
And Sue Bailey, though she's not with us in the studio today, has been talking to Tina Roche about Tina's experience of the WSET Wine Education Programme and also about Cambridge Cookery's new wine and food evenings.
Yeah, and also on today's programme we'll have our regular features, free food in Cambridge, local food and drink news, social media updates, and at the end of the programme, our jobs roundup.
So let's start with bread. Such an important part of diets throughout the world, and the breads of the world is a particular interest of Rhys Forrester, head baker at Hot Numbers in Shepreth, and he's begun to bake a new one each month.
We like to sort of get excited by breads from different countries. It doesn't always have to be a different country, but I think looking further afield often gets us some more inventive ideas, some different flavours that people might not have tried. And bread is so multi-applicable. Loads of cuisine areas have it, so it means that there's loads of exciting ideas that we can sort of channel into. This month's one is a Swedish bread called Limpa. It was suggested by Natalie, one of our fantastic bakers. It's a sort of sweetened, softer bread, so it's got like a tender crumb. It's not as chewy as our main sourdough bread. It's got a load of caraway seed flavour, orange zest flavour. It's sweetened with some treacle and some brown sugar as well. So it's quite, I guess it's almost cake-like. Because we're so passionate about sourdough, we've taken what is normally a yeast-leavened bread and we've made it sourdough. And that sort of intricate flavour from the longer fermentation actually really backs up the orange and the caraway in there, and it gets the sort of floral natures from the caraway and all those sorts of good stuff. So yeah, it's very cool.
Did it take a while to get right though, because sourdough itself isn't always easy, is it?
No, it's not. So I suppose obviously we've got a really skilled team here, and we're all obsessed with sourdough, and we make it a lot, so we're quite tuned into the sourdough workflow, how things work. Adapting a recipe is always, you know, a trial and error process, and we like to do that. It's what makes our speciality bread so special. It took us, I think, about five or six goes before we were really happy with the flavour.
And what's coming up then? What exciting things are in store?
So we're looking at all sorts of stuff. I said there that it doesn't always have to be from around the world. Sometimes it can just be a really exciting flavour that we want to sort of channel into. Like, we use rye for our starter, and we're really passionate about the fact that we do that. It's got a really nice flavour, and I think one of the special breads that we'd really like to work on is actually from a bakery in Copenhagen called Heart Bakery, who are fantastic, do a lot of rye bread because Copenhagen do, and it's his take on their sort of more traditional rye bread. So it's a rye and miso loaf. So the miso is in there to sort of accentuate the rye flavour. We've not actually trialled it yet, but I'm really excited for that one. We're also going to launch a French toast on our menu in April. And so when we do that, we're going to be making white tin loaves in the bakery for that. So we're going to put those on as a special bread for the weekend so that people can take that bread home and have a bit of a go with it themselves.
Because these breads are just available at the weekend, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. So we do them on a Saturday and a Sunday at the moment, with the idea that people kind of get together a bit more at the weekend and they might want a bit more of an interesting flavour to hit their, you know, hit their tables on those sort of days. And then, obviously, we go back to our sort of, and I don't want to call it standard because it's anything but like your sort of more run-of-the-mill bread that you might have every day is what we sort of do during the week.
Anything else coming up?
So obviously, like, I mean, we're always constantly looking for ideas. I'm constantly looking at bread. I'm constantly going to bakeries in different parts of the country. I'm trying to get around the world as well, but obviously I have a schedule to keep up here and I have to stick in work. But, you know, we're always looking. We've not got any, so I try to, obviously it's very easy, especially for a person like myself, to get run away with it all. So we try to keep the ideas to as minimal as possible, and then we'll sort of work from there. I think we can probably expect to see cheese and Marmite again. We've done that in the past. I want to do it in a kind of inventive way that maybe utilises a different grain to accentuate some of the flavours within that. Cheese and jalapeno is something that's really comes highly recommended by all of our chefs. They're obsessed with that flavour, so I think it's something we could definitely do as a special loaf. And I'm also really, really passionate about trying to start working with some local grain farmers to do a more regenerative loaf. And it's a completely different workflow. Often those grains don't work in the same way as you expect them to do as normal flour would. But the sort of environmental impacts that are so positive and the impacts for people that are so positive. And it tastes fantastic. Once you nail it, it is such a good flavour. And, you know, that would be a bread that maybe on paper didn't look so exciting because it's not anything other than wheat, but it's just a different type of wheat. But it's also a flavour that really, honestly, once you try it, it's like incredible. So I've been working with Flourish. They do a Maris Wigeon and a YQ population wheat, and they're both sustainably and regeneratively farmed and fantastic in flavour. I've been baking with those at home. And then I'm going to sort of bring some recipes in, but I'd really, really like to do a loaf that may even, you know, run a bit longer, might even be a sort of supplement to our full-time bread.
So have you tried the breads from the E5 Bakehouse in Hackney?
So actually, E5 were a big part of our sort of origin story.
Because they have the Fellows Farm, don't they?
Yeah, they do, yeah. I've actually never made it down to E5. I every time I'm in London, I sort of work in radiuses out of London because there are so many exciting bakeries, and I've just not quite got to the one that includes E5 yet. But I have their book at home, and I make a lot of their recipes. I've brought a few of their recipes in for trialling here. And actually, when we started doing bread, it was a course that Adam, our old head of food, went on at E5 Bakehouse that started the whole journey down into the south.
I went on that course as well.
Yeah,
actually.
Did you?
Yeah,
yeah, it's a fantastic
really,
course,
really good.
Isn't it? It's an interesting course.
Yeah. And what about things like cakes? You're developing some cakes and bars.
Yeah, we are. So some things that we're like dead set on launching are, we've got a chocolate orange cake that uses a bit of our coffee to accentuate the chocolate flavour, which is fantastic. It's vegan as well, as a sort of, you know, and that was almost by accident, not by design. I think it's always fantastic when you make something that tastes absolutely delicious and also happens to be something that lots more people can eat. We've got granola bars that we're working on, which I'm really, really excited about. Our granola is probably like one of the most popular things we sell if you combine retail and it being on the brunch menu.
Sell it in bags. I had some last weekend, actually. I really enjoyed it. And the yogurt was very good as well, actually.
Isn't it? Yeah. So it's a good dish. It's a good thing that people take home. And I think having it in a format where you can grab it and go with it and it's ready to eat is something that's fantastic. So that's a sort of granola flapjack hybrid that's dipped in chocolate, and it is honestly fantastic. We haven't got a firm launch date for it, but I'd imagine it'll definitely be within the next couple of months. If it's not on by April, I've done my job wrong.
I look forward to it. And you're developing a pan au raisin.
We've fully developed it, and we've launched it, and it's out now. It is a really, really fantastic product. It's taken the pan au raisin, it's using our laminated pastry, which Belle makes all of in-house. We make the dough, we laminate it ourselves. We've been making the croissants now for many months, and we thought, we need to do something else with this pastry. Yeah. It's so fantastic. And so we've done a pan of raisin. We've taken it in a bit more of a spice direction. So pan of raisins often have orange in them to soak the raisins, and we think that the orange and the spice goes together really nicely. So in the custard that goes into it, we've lightly spiced it to just sort of accentuate and bring out all that flavour. It's very delicious, yeah. It's on the counter now, and it's probably going to be around for quite some time, I'd imagine.
Right, OK. What time in the morning do you start work?
I start around 4 o'clock when the bake starts. Anything sort of, you know, we have two shifts. If you're on the bake, you start at 4. If you're on the mix, you start at 5 to 5.30.
Yeah.
That just ensures that we've got all the baked products out for our cafes. I actually find it really exciting. I find it really nice. There's something so delightful about a completely empty space with just you and the bread. And I know that sounds maybe over-romanticised, but it's actually really, really lovely. And it's nearly worth waking up at 3 in the morning for. Nearly.
Great. Okay, well, this is obviously an exciting place to work, Rhys.
For sure.
You're very much part of it, so yeah. Thanks very much.
No worries at all. Thanks.
What an excellent place Hot Numbers is, with their explorations of bread and other baked goods, and, of course, their ever-changing coffees. It's run by enthusiasts, I feel.
And did you try the pan au raisin? Sounded really good.
Yeah, I bought a couple to have at home with coffee, and they really were excellent, very well flavoured, and you can taste that orange. I'd recommend them.
I'm free.
But now, details of free food available in and around Cambridge, and the information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, and that exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
Yeah, that's right. And looking at Olio for Cambridge today shows us that Olio food champion Wilron has returned with plenty of pastries and bakery items, including chocolate muffins, cinnamon buns, pan au chocolat, egg tarts, cheese twists, donuts and almond croissants. She's also got tiger rolls, pizza rolls, paninis and bagels available. Now, Wilron is designated as an Olio food champion, and that's because she collects leftover food from supermarkets rather than simply putting up her own items for collection. Now, all of her food is available for pickup from Coleridge Road, just opposite the park entrance, the Coleridge Park entrance. Next up is Kelly at Godwin Way, just off Wolfstand Close. She's giving away a pack of Carolina Reaper curry powder, which she says is simply too hot for her. And finally, Danny, who is near Marshall's off Newmarket Road, has a lot of things to offer, such as a jar of smooth almond butter, a jar of peanut butter, bay leaves, waffle cones, tortillas and white onions. And that is just a brief roundup of what's been available on the Olio app today on Saturday.
Is it a good day for Olio today?
It's pretty reasonable, but I think that's because it was a few people offering a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Oh, that's good. Anyway, also, there's the other app we talk about called Too Good To Go, and that has unsold food from restaurants, cafes and shops, often at less than half price, and you just get a bag of surplus food ready for you to take home, and that saves it from being binned at the end of the day's trading. Lots of independents as well as big national names use it.
Okay, let's move on to our first news break now for Saturday the 22nd of February. And on the 25th, at the Chequers in Falmere, there is a nose-to-tail pork meal. This is £65, starts at 7 for a 7.30 start. It looks like a really good menu. The starter alone is slow roast trotter, black pudding, parma ham, crackling, roast chestnut and jus, and there are four other courses to follow that. And if nose-to-tail is your thing, there's also a nose-to-tail beef feast at Parker's Tavern on the 5th of March, as their nose-to-tail series continues. That is £39.50 and starts at 7 p.m.
That starter really is remarkable.
Yeah.
On the 5th of March, Organic Garden pops up again at the Wine Rooms in Hills Road. It's a very popular evening with Organic Garden. There are canapes, a first course, a main, and the dessert sounds intriguing. Celeriac and apple tart tatin. The cost, £40.
Also on the 5th of March, at Finboy's in Mill Road, there is a Yarra Valley wine tasting dinner, in which the wines are going to be paired with Finboy's fish dishes. The cost for that is £85.
And on the 12th of March, a free Omwani African coffee cupping at Hot Numbers in Gwydir Street at 5.30. Dave from Omwani will be there to chat about the coffees, and you get to taste a selection of them. There are 20 places available, and you book on the Hot Numbers website.
And there's a 3-day foodies festival coming to Parker's Peace, that's from the 4th till the 6th of July, with both celebrity and award-winning chefs, as well as music. The names include Matty Edgell, Great British Bake Off winner in 2023, Christian de Vries from the Netherlands, but now living in London, finalist of MasterChef Professionals in 2024, and Richie Stainsby from Nottingham, MasterChef finalist 2024. There will be a drinks tent that features tutor tastings of champagne, beer, cider, cocktail and wine, and local producers will be in the artisan market, where there'll be a feasting tent featuring a range of world food. Also, there's a cooking tent where you can learn new techniques with a lesson from a top chef and take the results home with you. And there's a chili eating competition too. All of these details will be on the Love Cambridge website shortly. Tickets will be priced at £6 for a child, under sixes go free, and it's £21 for adults. That's all for now. More news later.
Right on to coffee now, something enjoyed by so many of us. And two research students at Darwin College have begun the Darwin Coffee Society, which explores Cambridge's cafes. It's grown to nearly 300 members. Now, I like talking about coffee as much as I like talking about bread. So I invited the Society's founders, Magda and Jonas, into our studios to talk about it. And I first asked about what they enjoyed about Cambridge's cafes.
So one thing is the coffee, but it's a lot is about the environment, so the cafe itself and the people there and who runs it and who are the other people who go there. So that's what for me is probably the most important thing is environment around it.
I'll ask Jonas the same question then. Yeah. Do you see much difference in the coffees?
I mean, meanwhile, I do. I think it's a little bit like wine in the sense that you need to have it a lot over time to start noticing the difference.
Are you able to determine what difference a barista makes?
100%. Yeah, I mean, or let's put it this way. It's, I don't want to say good or bad baristas, but you do know that a good barista will be able to tease out the particular taste of the coffee, right?
And sometimes it's a bit of a shame because you see a really good, really fancy machine that has so much potential, and then sometimes the coffee is not as good as it could be, and then you wonder, is it the beans or could the settings on the machine be changed a bit?
Well, you have to change the settings during the day according to things atmospheric pressure. You know, it's a remarkably fine adjustment that you can make. But I'm interested, Magda, in the atmosphere, because the atmosphere of different coffee shops is quite different, isn't it?
You know, some are more for working, where you see a lot of people with laptops. Some are a bit more like sterile. Others feel a bit more homely.
So tell me, which is a homely feel one?
So there's one that we used to love to go to, the Locker Cafe, and that felt really homely, like random furniture and random paintings. So that felt really homely. And then, for example, Bold Brothers is a lot more sterile and a lot more elegant.
Is that the Bold? Do you go to the one in Regent Street or the
yes,
one
exactly.
in Yes,
exactly. So it's
Street.
Just really close to work. So we often do like work coffees there. Every single time that you go there, it's good coffee. So it's not hit and miss. Mm. It's no matter who is the barista, no matter what day it is, no matter what the atmospheric pressure is, it's always really good coffee.
Yes. I wonder if baristas wake up worrying about the atmospheric pressure that day.
Yeah, so we try to go firstly to independent coffee shops. So whenever we see that there's a new independent coffee shop, we try to go there. We also try, because people live in different places all around the city and work in different places. That's the thing with being a postgraduate student, that people are just everywhere. So we try to accommodate a bit for everyone. And we thought that at some point we would run out of cafes, but we just never do. Every single time there's a new one.
Yeah, it seems to be a market that's never saturated. You think now there's too many cafes in Cambridge, but no, never.
There's a new one opened in Chesterton Road called Coffee Inn.
Yes, we're thinking of going there next, actually, but we have a long list.
I mean, there's a long list, right? There's also Elimata right around the corner. That's relatively recent.
Yeah.
Bold Brothers is opening a new shop. Harvey's is opening a new shop.
Have you been to the coffee shop in Mill Road that hasn't got a name?
Dom's.
Yes. Have you been there?
Yeah, who hasn't?
No, yeah.
It's amazing.
It's amazing, but the vibe there is different, right? Because firstly, well, you will be talking to Dom himself as well a lot, so it's not a good place if you want to like go on a date or or, you know, because
unless you want your date to be
everyone there will be chatting with you as well. But it's a really unique place because you sit at a bar, you talk to Dom, you talk to the other people there. There's only really a few seats,
but you talk about coffee, don't you?
Yeah, coffee, but then also Dom, about life, about but also about life and just everything. And you go there for like hours, so it's a really an experience. We never had a coffee circle there because it's not big enough.
No.
But yeah, we were thinking about whether there are ways in which we could do it, but
I don't know that there's many places like that.
No.
In many cities.
No, but for me, like, it's really important to keep having places like this, right? Because I mean, I don't want to speak for Dom here, but I think one, he embodies a bit this idea of coffee as a craft. Right, nowadays coffee, it's becoming more and more automated. Like now you have cafes with automated tamper stations where you don't even have to steam the milk anymore, where it just comes out of a tap, right? But at Dom's, it's really still about this like craft of making the coffee that you can't really break down into variables or science or automation. Mm. But there's just something nice and intangible about it. Yeah. And he manages to preserve that.
Yeah.
That's really great.
And he also has this no phones policy, which is really great because people don't go on their phones. People just go there and chat to each other. And he's really strict about it. So if someone takes out their phone, even to just take a picture, he's like, no. And that's really great. And we see that also in our coffee circles, that people really, you know, it's just an hour and you go there and you just chat to people and people are not on their phones.
Yeah. Well, I asked him if he'd like to do an interview and he said no. And I said, well, can I do some photos? And he said, no. And I said, well, why not? You know, most people like publicity. He said, I want this to be known through word of mouth.
So we asked
him. So he's unique.
Yeah. We asked him if he wanted to join our Coffee Founders panel. Also no.
But yeah, no, very, very understandable. Like, yeah. That has to, I think it's great. So in a world where more and more things are just becoming the same, right? And that's being pushed by social media because everyone's sharing their coffee on Instagram, and then all the coffee shops optimize for Instagram as well, right? There have to be some places that are escaped from that.
Mm. So do you ever go to places like Starbucks and Nero and whatnot? Do you ever go?
The only time I've ever been to Starbucks was at Gatwick Airport because I was extremely tired, and it's the only cafe there.
In general, we try to support.
And did you? Well, we don't want to be sued by Starbucks.
We don't want to be sued by Starbucks, but I guess that says everything, right?
But you've been there, you only done it once, so it says a lot.
Yeah. But we do try to go to independent coffee shops and like support, especially, I guess, since COVID, there's been quite a push for supporting local independent businesses. So we've been really trying to build this relationship with local cafes, and you always meet the owner or the manager and you can chat to them. And
they must be delighted when you turn up with your, because there's quite a few of you that turn up, aren't there? How many would you say is a sort of normal?
10 to 15.
So we've had one, the poor people at Noche. We organized the coffee circle there during Freshers Week, and I think we rocked up with what, 25 people?
Yeah.
And the barista was like, I can't keep up with this.
And this was their first week. So they were really happy to have us, but at the same time, you know, it's something that takes a bit of time to get into it, and we rocked up 25 people at once.
I wonder what the barista thinks with this queue of 25 people, you know. So, I'm knowing that by the time he's got to the 25th, the first person long finished.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder about the psychology of being a barista, actually. You know, what must it be like with these, you know, all these people are waiting, but you can't hurry the process up. I wonder whether going around lots of cafes is a sort of modern version of the pub crawl.
The coffee crawl.
Or do you do the pub crawl as well?
Well, we haven't chained several cafes yet, because then at some point you get too caffeinated. You're just Yeah, so you can't really do too many in a row. But it has been really cool because people have come to us and said, wow, it's through you guys that I discover the newest cafe in Cambridge. And we thought that was a really great compliment, because it's like, we're like into it, like we're nerdy about this stuff. So we'll figure out right away when something new opens. Mm. But for them, it's like, it's discovery, and that's...
How much coffee do you drink in a day then?
I would say we're pushing the boundary, but not over it. So I mean, I never go over 4. Like, for me, that's the... I prefer to have, like, nice coffees, but less than bad coffee all the time.
As with wine, I would say.
I would say for me it's a one or two.
Yeah.
But actually, somebody who came to our coffee circle recently said they have been diagnosed with a coffee addiction by the doctors because they were having over 12 a day. So they had to have like special tests, and then they have to have the coffee detox. So it's actually a condition, it turns out. We thought they were joking.
We shouldn't be laughing,
yeah,
should we?
We thought they were joking, but they actually weren't. So now they're slowly getting back into it, which is why they've started joining the circles, because they can drink coffee again.
How did you get started with this? What was this? Who had the idea and why?
Yes, that's actually a pretty funny story because I've been sort of a coffee nerd for a while now, and I was down that YouTube rabbit hole reading stuff about it, making my own coffee at home. And then Magda, she thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool if Jonas doesn't just do that for himself, but also talks to people about it. And so then on my birthday, I wake up and she's filled in the society application form, like on the, scheduled all the different events, budgeted it all out, and basically just said, sign here. And then, yeah, and then from one day to the next, we started the society. And we did, I mean, initially we thought it would just be like a handful of people, right? Or maybe like 10, 15 people that like this kind of thing. And it's been pretty crazy how how many people find this cool.
And it's very like low commitment for people and very accessible. Like anyone can come. You don't even have to like coffee. Sometimes people come who don't even drink coffee and they order tea, but they just want to join for other reasons. So it's just very accessible. You don't have to come.
That's a great idea. And but do you think it will sustained? Do you think it will live to the next academic year and the one after
that? We're hoping, because we're both of us are now finishing our PhDs, so we're in the final few months, so we're hoping there will be people who will take over. Yes, but that's our definitely a big consideration.
Yeah.
So
what's your PhD about?
So I'm working on diagnostics for Parkinson's disease.
Right, tell me what both yours is.
And I study utopian communities.
Right, well, thank you very much for coming in anyway. Thanks.
Thank you.
What an important thing cafes are, and how different they are, and how interesting coffee is. Thanks very much to Magda and Jonas for that, and let's hope the society does carry on into future years. Actually, I went to a cafe I hadn't been to before very recently, the one at Stapleford Granary, Matt. We've mentioned it a few times. It's really good. A good range of things to eat, good quality, and lots of different coffees, and a beautiful place too. And I went to see an exhibition of brutalist architecture there, which I also enjoyed. It's worth a visit. And on the subject of coffee, the Algerian coffee store in Old Compton Street in Soho has just got back in stock a coffee that they haven't had for some years. I don't know whether it's because the farms failed or frost affected the crops, but it's Sulawesi from Indonesia, and they've advertised it recently, and it's obviously been a very top favourite for a number of their customers for many years. Anyway, I went to get some Sulawesi, and it's, you know, it's one of those coffees that's strong tasting. You taste the coffee, but it's not bitter. You know, it really is quite extraordinary. And I thought, there's going to be a run on this, so I don't want it to run out before I've got some. So I said, have you got much? Is it going to sell out? So they checked in the back and they said, yeah, we bought a ton.
But strength without tipping over into the bitterness.
Yeah.
Well, the Society organised a talk with three local cafe owners recently to talk about the joys and the tribulations of cafe owning. Alan and I went along to it. We'll report back about that soon. But now we're coming up to the break, after which we're going to speak with Tina Roche on wine, as well as news from Empty Common Community Gardens. So back in 2 minutes. Don't go away.
Cambridge Radio. On Cambridge Arts Roundup, Simon Burton drops into Clare College to find out about a tapestry that centres on the career of scientist and suffragette Hertha Ayrton.
She went for long walks along the beach, a gorgeous sandy beach at Margate, and she became fascinated by the way that ripples form in the sand as the waves come in.
We wrestle with the current political landscape with the Telegraph satirical cartoonist Andy Davey.
Trump was hanging on to his ultra base and trying to keep them on side while Musk was perilously engaging himself with knocking holes in the border wall. In fact, that's the only Trump cartoon I've managed to get them to publish recently.
Cambridge Arts Roundup, online whenever you want, and Sunday at 12 on Cambridge Radio.
Step into the world of virtual reality at VR Extra, Cambridge's first virtual reality centre. Battle zombies, escape lost worlds, or challenge your friends in our action-packed VR games. VR Extra is perfect for families, parties, and corporate events, with customised packages available. And when you've survived the apocalypse, grab a coffee, smoothies, and fresh sandwiches in our cafe. Find us at 65 Regent Street, Cambridge, next to Parker's Peace. Book now at vrextra.com/Cambridge. VR Extra, where family fun meets virtual adventure.
Well, welcome back to Flavour, and let's kick off with some more news. On the 17th of March, Finboys has a one-night set menu of dishes inspired by Japan's food culture, and that's £50, and sake will be available to purchase.
On the 27th of March, we'll see the return of the Whiskey Fair run by Cambridge Wine Merchants. This will be at the Cambridge Rugby Club from 5 till 9pm, and tickets will cost £25. There are over 80 whiskies to discover, and food is available to purchase.
On the 28th of March, Hidden by Pudini in Willingham have a feast over fire with a very apt dessert, burnt Basque cheesecake with smoked strawberries and rhubarb, and the price is £50.
Gourmandise has a Mother's Day celebration on the 30th of March in Cottenham. There's an array of sweet and savoury treats, a complimentary glass of Prosecco, and tea and coffee throughout the event. Cost for that is £50.
Also on the 30th of March, a Mother's Day Sunday lunch at Finboys for £50.
And over in Congratulations Corner, we see Daniel Clifford and his colleagues at Midsummer House, who have won 2 Michelin stars last week. And also, everybody at Restaurant 22 and Mark Poynton and his team at Caister Hall in Norfolk, both of those restaurants have won 1 star. And Butch Annie's on Market Street is in there too, celebrating 10 years this month. So many congratulations to them all.
And that's Supercharged with Wine, 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 taking us into our wine news. On the 28th of February, Chong Chong Bo has a Fine Wine Friday, a tasting of Austrian wines, and that's at 6:30 in Market House with 9 wines to taste. Attendance is limited to 12 people and the cost is £85. There's more details on the Amphora Cambridge website.
And on the 4th of March, Cambridge Wine Merchants has a tasting of Allegrini wines. This is at the Cherry Hinton Road branch. It runs from 7 till 9pm and costs £25. And it features 6 wines, and nibbles are included too. Tickets are available online or from any of their shops.
And coming up with the Cambridge Wine School, there's an introduction to wine tasting at the Cambridge Tap on the corner of Downing Street and Regent Street. Details are on the website and it costs £35.
Meanwhile, Cambridge Wine Academy has a tour of Italian wines on the 5th of March for £30 at the Cherry Hinton Road branch of Cambridge Wine Merchants, hosted by Steve Hovington.
And on the 19th of March at the Wine Rooms in Hills Road, there's a tasting of sweet wines from around the world. It runs from 7 till 8:30. That also is hosted by Steve Hovington, and it includes light bar snacks.
OK, well, that's the end of the news for today. But following up on wine, a growth area is wine education. Now, there's a big increase in the number of people doing a Masters of Wine course, and also the WSET, which stands for Wine and Spirits Education Trust. Several people in Cambridge offer this, and Tina Roche from Cambridge Cookery is taking a WSET course in London and talked to Sue about it, about wine and food generally, and about her new evenings of food and wine.
The WSET, the Wine and Spirit Educational Trust, is a global, well, it's the only global institute for any kind of serious wine certificate, and the flagship is in London. So people are doing these courses from around the world. So, for instance, I know that there's a group of people out in California doing it parallel to us. So we sit exams on the same dates, etc., and we belong sort of officially to the same cohort. And this diploma level is something that you only do after you have gone through the the previous stages, so it's sort of known as a level 1, 2, 3, and now 4, which is the diploma. So, you know, it's not something that one takes on suddenly. It is a big undertaking, but I think for most of us who have an interest in wine and who have sort of journeyed through some of the other levels, it does become quite appealing to widen the scope and take on what is a lot. So this is a sort of 2-year degree, if you like.
That is quite a commitment and quite a challenge. So did you do the certificate first?
You have to do level 1, 2, 3 first. I mean, you're not allowed, you can't go to level 4, even if you were to say, oh, come on, you know, I've spent my life in the world of wine. You have to go through the previous levels. And a lot of people ask, oh, so is this a sommelier degree? And it absolutely isn't. So there are sort of two ways. Sommeliers go very much, obviously, it's for the commercial world. It's a commercial role in a fine dining scenario to be a sommelier, where you are meant to be able to suggest wines that match food, of course, and know a certain, there's probably a group of wines that one would expect to find in fine dining around the world. This is more to do with, you say, more academic side rather than the commercial side, because it's anything from plant biology to very much about soil, climate, regions, why things are made a certain way and what makes wines taste the way they do. So the primary aim for anyone doing the diploma is not to be able to identify the actual wine necessarily, but to assess its quality.
How exactly does the course run?
There are different options that you can choose here in London. Some people choose to do it remotely, so you can do it sort of digitally if you live far away. But there are equally people who come every week from other European countries. You know, they will fly in once a week from France or Germany or whatever, because the London WSET is sort of considered the benchmark, if you like. And some people just prefer to come and do it here. So there are versions of the course that are very compacted, where you come for a whole week, then you go home to wherever you live for 3 weeks, and you come back for another week. And then there are the more normal ones for those of us who, you know, live close enough to get in. That is just once a week. So it's a day a week in London. And then you have the rest of that week to catch up on what you've learnt, and broadly at least feel that you have some idea. And obviously part of those lectures with, you know, absolutely superb high level wine educators is also the blind tasting. So obviously it's not just theory, it's both of those hand in hand.
And of course, with wine, you have the global wines to contend with, don't you? Which is a challenge.
Yeah, it is a huge challenge. But there's so much about it that I personally find very interesting. You know, it's the fact that climate change is something that everyone talks a lot about. And I think nowhere is it more acutely felt, perhaps, than in wine production, or rather in viticulture. I'm sure there are other areas of agriculture and farming that would say the same, but they are very much at the front line, because so much of the climate, which types of vines do well there, go back hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, often to the Middle Ages. There's a reason why things are done the way they are, because things have by and large been more or less the same climate. So, you know, if you have a cool maritime climate in Bordeaux, it's based on something that's been more or less the same for many, many hundreds of years. Suddenly, that's no longer the case. So the impact is huge. And I find it interesting to link to how weather and climate affect it, and also how wine is a world in crisis, to be absolutely honest, because, you know, the young generation drink less. There's much more gravitation to no alcohol, and certainly to low alcohol. And of course, one of the effects of global warming is that it's warmer and sunnier. So the sugar levels go up, and with sugar levels come more alcohol, because it's the sugar that's being gobbled up by yeast in order to ferment. So what we would probably think of as more sort of headache-inducing New World wines are struggling to stay below, say, 15, sometimes 16 ABV, and perhaps is also going to change global competition. I mean, there's a lot that I find really interesting beside, you know, drinking a glass of wine and assessing it.
And of course, you've been passing on your knowledge. I attended a lovely wine and food complimenting evening and with a quiz as well, which was really rather fun last week, and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Good.
What's this, the first of the events that you have actually hosted of this type?
Yeah, it was since I started on the diploma last year, and pre-lockdown, I did a few, but this is a sort of relaunch, if you like. I'm just very keen to hopefully add something that just comes at it from a slightly different angle. You know, there are several excellent wine educators or wine events that you can attend in Cambridge. We're really lucky that we have quite a good choice, I think. But my aim is perhaps just to offer something that doesn't directly compete with anybody else, in the sense that I am also first and foremost a Cordon Bleu trained chef. So perhaps unlike most people in the wine world, I also have really, really very deep knowledge about the food. So for me, it's very much about finding fun combinations, good combinations, and that kind of aha experience when you have something that is right, but also something that is less good. So I'm not so prescriptive, perhaps. I don't tend to say wine A goes with dish A. Now let's move on to wine and dish B. I think that combining across is equally interesting, because I think you often learn more when you taste or learn something that makes you think, gosh, yeah, no, that really wasn't great, was it? The wine tastes more metallic or more tannic suddenly, ooh, as it is to have something where you just think, yeah, I know, as they told me, this works. Then I think perhaps you haven't learned as much as when you're a bit challenged to figure out what happened there and why did adding this mouthful of something suddenly make a really good wine taste quite challenging. This is usually the food that ruins or interferes with the wine, not the other way around.
I must admit, I found your approach really refreshing, and to have such superb food as well. I thought that was an excellent combination. No, I really thoroughly enjoyed it. And you're going to be having another one coming up, I believe, in April. Is that right?
Yeah. So they would be on Fridays generally, and probably sort of every 8 weeks or something, because we obviously have a lot of other stuff going on at our cookery school. But yeah, the next one is another little passion of mine, which is sherries and Madeiras. I think they're very misunderstood often. They're very, very dry wines. And in the case of Madeira, they're also exceptionally acidic in a good way. And I think sherry is probably better known, but often thought of as something sweet, you know, that lovely deep blue glass bottle, won't mention any brand names. And you may be thinking of sort of an elderly woman is the kind of stereotypical sherry drinker, isn't it? Kind of asking for a small little tot of sherry, but they are actually some of the best culinary wines. That's just brilliant. And then Madeira, I think few people, including me until recently, I felt I knew next to nothing about them. I probably assumed it was mainly the sweeter ones again. But Madeira really, with its curious climate out far out in the Atlantic, you know, it's very wet and very rainy most of the time, have highly acidic grapes. And then the way they are produced make them just superb with savoury food. It's not a dessert wine primarily, it's a food wine. So I'm looking forward to hopefully kind of opening people's eyes a bit to something new and fun. And also they are unknown and therefore really good value. You know, they're so much less expensive than more well-known brands. It's like anything, isn't it? So I think once you learn to love them, you kind of think, oh, that was lucky, because I can get something exceptional for £15.
That's really interesting, because I do like Madeira as a wine, but as you said, I've often thought of it more as a sort of dessert type wine rather than a main course type wine. So that sounds a really eye-opening event, which I will definitely be signing up for. How does one find out about your courses?
Oh, thank you for asking. Yes, so they just sit on our website, on the Cambridge Cookery website, along with our vast list of classes. I tend to also post quite a lot on Instagram, so that's my main kind of communication channel, if you like. It just sits amongst our cookery classes, so it's quite easy to just go on and click on a program and it will pop up.
And so that's cambridgecookeryschool.co.uk.
We've changed it actually too, because it was such a mouthful and often got misspelled. So for the past few years, it's now cambridgecookery.com. So we got rid of the rest. It's cambridgecookery.com, and it made, you know, made it a lot easier to communicate.
And that was Tina Roche from Cambridge Cookery. And they sound like great evenings to me. We were going to have a feature from the Chet Valley Vineyard just south of Norwich on the programme. We're going to run that next time now.
And there's the music signalling time for news from social media.
Yes, and we mentioned new products before, Hot Numbers. Well, Maison Clément has a new product, Earl Grey Macarons, which sound really rather nice. Yeah. And Modigliani in Mill Road has some truffle products this weekend, including truffle jam and truffle and hazelnut crunchy. And they're available in the cafe and also to order. I think they're just for this weekend only. I suppose it depends how well they sell. Mm. Warden House, who we interviewed ages ago, Matt, I don't remember if you remember how long ago, but a very long time ago, they're on the Sunday market. They sell things like apples and eggs and whatnot, and honey. And they'll probably sell out tomorrow. They have some lime honey, which they only have once every few years because their lime trees don't always have the blossom. And they've got that now, and they think they might sell out of it tomorrow. Bushel Box Farm in William has Daray Spice apples. They're grown in their orchard and they originated in Colchester, and they say that they've matured beautifully. And Kombucha has put on social media that its product is now available in Bacchanalia.
Oh, brilliant.
So, yeah, so there we go. That's today's
social media news.
Thank you.
Now let's begin this next feature with one of the most important things you can have on an allotment.
Nice. Kettle on.
That's
great, isn't it? Yeah.
You need a hot tea if you're down the allotments in February. Here at the Empty Common Community Garden, off Brookfields Avenue, volunteers and enthusiasts come together to garden, to talk permaculture and escape the noise of the city. Here's Joe, a new volunteer.
I was here once and it had been raining. The sun shone low through the branches of the trees and it was so beautiful. And I thought, oh my God, I can come here any time. You know, it was just really lovely.
Over the years, the garden has attracted people of all ages and skills. But the COVID pandemic marked a notable drop-off in numbers that haven't quite returned. More volunteers are needed, and early in the year can be a good time to join.
Come spring, that's usually when people want to start again. Mm. We're having a full session course on different Sundays, so it'll be the 23rd of March, the 30th of March, the 6th of April, and the 13th of April. People can come, and that's when we'll be sowing seeds and planting seedlings and all that sort of nice spring baby plant stuff, yeah. And that's when we want people to start to learn at the beginning and then hopefully come throughout the summer and then eat their babies when they've grown into great big fat plants.
Gardening here is all organic, no pesticides. There's a forest garden, a pond, large polytunnel and several types of garden beds, including raised beds for all sorts of herbs, veg and flowers.
My background really is in flowers, and I really love flowers. They asked me to do a patch of edible flowers. I just think that's the most exciting time of year, when you've got a seed packet in your hand and you're just about to sow them, you know. You're full of hope. Nasturtiums. No garden should be without one. They do taste a bit cabbagey. You have to grow borage, really. Borage you can put in your drink, your summer drinks. Yeah. The Pims.
Spade.
That's it. Actually, on a sunny day, this is almost the best time because it's like life just springing out the ground again. Yeah. No, it's wonderful.
We checked out the first edible, poking its shoots through the soil.
Ramsden's wild garlic. It's a native wild plant. And it's great for making pesto. It's just garlic leaves, basically. Yeah, it's really good at keeping the weeds at bay. So you've got very little weeding. The plants, they come up in the spring when we've got no other food, basically. And then they die down and leave the ground bare. But the seeds inhibit other plants growing. So you get nice, clean ground. You don't have to do much weeding. So it's a perfect sort of low maintenance, pretty, comes at a really bad time of year for food normally. And yeah, makes brilliant pesto with walnuts. So yeah, so it's perfect really.
The volunteers that you're looking for, it's not just manpower, it's also knowledge.
even if people think they may be too old to garden or too infirm, they've still got an awful lot of skills up there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we could have gardeners with good knowledge, yeah, if they're beyond gardening, that is not a problem. That is when they that is when older people should be passing on all their knowledge to these youngsters coming in. Because I think that's our duty as gardeners, to pass it down the generations, really. Yeah. And if anyone's out there who understands any gardening, vegetable gardening or flower gardening or anything, who loves plants, if they can spread their love of plants, yeah. Yeah, we'd happily have more people on board, because actually that's one thing we're quite short of, is people with knowledge, yeah.
And this is what attracted Joe to the garden.
I've been a professional gardener all my life, really. And then I retired. I have my own garden, but I'm just interested in public gardens, really. Especially community gardens. That really does interest me.
So you think it's a good idea for anyone listening out there? This is a nice place to come if you want to get into gardening. You don't have to keep your own.
Yes, I didn't want to take on a full allotment and eat all those vegetables. And, you know, but to be part of the sort of growing something with other people is really what I wanted to do, yeah.
The Empty Common Community Garden is open to everyone. You don't even have to garden. You can just come and enjoy the area, like you would Parker's Peace. But do get stuck in if you can.
I sort of wake up on a Sunday and I think, what would I do if I didn't go and garden?
Yeah, so if you fancy a bit of gardening but you don't have the time to commit to your own, why not give the Empty Common Community Garden a try? Full details are on their website, transitioncambridge.org, and help keep that vibrant community space going.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we've got a few minutes to spare, Matt, so let's have a quick look at food in the newspapers. And
okay.
There's a worrying trend, I think, if it is a trend, starting in London. This is on the front page of today's Financial Times, which says top London restaurants are trying to deter reservation squatting and freeloading social media influencers by imposing deposits and minimum spends as the industry grapples with booking bots and rising costs.
Mm.
And Gymkhana, the two Michelin-starred Indian restaurant in Mayfair, has introduced a £100 minimum spend for dinner payable on booking, while Hutong in the Shard skyscraper has set it to £80 per adult for dinner reservations on Fridays and Saturdays. And Gymkhana said this happened in due part to the large number of cancellations and no shows, but also because of the large volumes of bots and reservation resale websites directed at the restaurant after it won its second Michelin star. Mm. So people booking up tables.
Mm.
So you have to go to their site to book up the table and they will add a charge on top.
Yes,
reservation
yeah.
bots. So let's hope that doesn't start happening here. In The Guardian today, in the feast section, there's a column called KitchenAid, making the best way to boost a can of baked beans. And there's quite a few ideas. Let's just look at one. Toasting spices, cumin seeds, ground coriander, Aleppo chili, in an oven-proof pan, adding the magic triangle of ginger, garlic and chili and some oil, and then add the beans, crumble feta on top, pop it in the oven till the top caramelises, and perhaps add a drizzle of tahini as well for a take on shakshuka and a lovely brunch or lunch. What a great thing to do.
That's
with
brilliant,
a tin
yeah.
of beans. Right. Okay. There's also a recipe for, which looks delicious to me, celeriac and potato dauphinoise. And celeriac is one of those vegetables which I think people don't always get the best out of. And I remember we had some recipes from, amongst others, Alex Rushmer about celeriac, which was just fantastic. It was just roasting it in the oven and basting it frequently with butter and roasting it for 2 or 3 hours on quite a low temperature. And I tried it and it was absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
And in one of the very few times I've been to Midsummer House, we had a celeriac dish there which was cooked in the big green egg and it was just wonderful. Yeah. It's a good vegetable, but you have to know how to treat it.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's Green Onions signalling the start of our job section, and there is a vacancy for a barista and a baker-stroke-chef at the new Coffee Inn in Chesterton Road. I hope I said that right. The email is spelt C-O-F-E-I-N, so that's coffeeincambridge@gmail.com.
Now, that is a full-time job, and weekend availability is also needed. And that takes us to the end of our programme for today. Don't forget we're here on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon. We're repeated on Mondays at 2 p.m. and also available as a podcast from all the usual places.
But that's all from us for today.
Yeah, and coming up next on Cambridge Radio is The Music Mix, followed by Home with Lucy Milazzo at 4 p.m.
We'll be back on the 8th of March. We'll have lots more food and drink news, jobs and features. But until then, from me and Matt, goodbye.